Support for WPR comes from Luther College in Decorah, Iowa, a community where students are invited to learn actively, lead courageously, and live purposefully for a lifetime of impact. More about Luther College at luther.edu.
Support for WPR comes from the American Society of Landscape Architects Wisconsin Chapter. Dedicated to reimagining the design of outdoor spaces for the well-being of all. Examples at wiasla.com.
Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you with us on this Friday, August the 17th. It's about 10 minutes past 8 o'clock, and it's time for our Friday Week in Review, when we talk with two guests from different political perspectives about the most significant news stories of the week and the issues raised by the news stories each week. And today we have two guests from different perspectives. One has run for office as a Republican. The other has run for office as a Green Party candidate. And we will welcome your questions and your observations from the news this week as well. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest today to review the news of the week, Kevin Hermaning, former chair of the Marathon County Republican Party. He was also a former hostage in Iran. He is currently a financial planner in Wausau. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
And Tony Palmieri is also with us. He is an associate professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh, a former Green Party candidate for the state legislature, a member of the Oshkosh Common Council, and a media columnist for the Fox Valley's alternative newspaper, The Valley Scene. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning.
We'll start with where I left off in the last hour. We won't spend a lot of time on it, but early this morning, the Dane County Board voted in favor of impeaching President Bush and Vice President Cheney, becoming one of the first county boards in the nation to do something like this. The vote was 20-3 to urge Congress to start impeachment proceedings against both Bush and Cheney. Was this an important exercise in democracy or a waste of time, Tony Palmieri first?
Oh, I don't think it was a waste of time at all. I think they're sending a very important message to the Congress and to the President and to the people of Wisconsin that they are outraged at what's been going on in Washington. And I applaud them for what they did, and I hope other county boards follow suit.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Hermaning, what do you think?
Well, I don't necessarily think it's a waste of time, though it certainly has absolutely no impact other than to get a lot of headlines for Dane County. And it's interesting that they would do this during a time that the president is actually seeing his poll numbers, if you will, not that this president lives and dies by polls, but go from about 28%, 29% all the way up to 35%, while Congress is all the way down at 25%. So it's an interesting exercise in democracy. It's fun to watch, not unlike some of the cities last year in November that had their election process basically endorse the same kind of intention. It will have absolutely zero impact on Congress. We know that our senator, at least one of them, would like to see this happen, Senator Feingold, but it's not likely to gain any traction whatsoever in either the House or the Senate.
Yeah. Tony Palmieri?
Well, Feingold is calling for a censure, I believe, and not an impeachment of the president.
That's fair.
The president or vice president. But I think just as the referendum questions in Wisconsin that asked for a withdrawal of troops from Iraq, I think those had an impact on politics. I think this will have an impact also. It starts a dialogue. It keeps pressure on members of Congress to make sure they're trying at least to keep the president accountable on Iraq. In many ways, Joy, I think votes like what Dane County did last night are aimed at the Democrats in Congress. The Democrats came to a majority in November of 2006, I think, on a platform to get some accountability on the war, and they have not done that. They've largely caved in. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is a message really sent at them. They should not feel all that confident going into 2008. Unless they really do something more.
Yeah,
well, Cindy Sheehan's even running for Congress, presumably, against Nancy Pelosi. So the Democrats have as many folks in a disparate spectrum of views on these kinds of issues. And while there's no question that the war and what's going on in Iraq and Afghanistan played a role in last fall's elections. There are a lot of issues that that played a role, and certainly Congress's poll numbers are reflecting that.
Yeah, what about those poll numbers, Tony Palmieri? What do you make of that?
I think the poll numbers are showing that the public is not getting what it wanted in those elections. I believe the voters sent the Democrats to Congress to get this war ended. And we are no closer to that today, unfortunately, than we were when they got elected. And I think people are outraged. They're seeing them cave in on domestic wiretapping, on the war, and other issues. Since I think those poll numbers are saying the public wants its constitution back, and they want sanity back as regards war and peace issues and other issues. And the Democrats in Congress have not done it. And so, therefore, their poll numbers are suffering and will continue to suffer until we see some guts.
Yeah. There was a report yesterday in the Washington Post that said the so-called Petraeus report, the one that's going to come out in mid-September, is instead, I'm quoting from the story here, instead looking more like a White House con job in the making, that the Bush administration is going to write this report, not General Petraeus. Does that surprise you, Tony Palmieri?
No, in fact, the Los Angeles Times broke this story about less than a week ago, that this report, which the White House has said, we have to wait to see what General Petraeus says. He's the most credible general we've had out there. Now we find out that Petraeus will only be reporting to people within the White House who will write the report. So we can predict now what the report will say. Iraq has been made major progress, it's glowing, and so on. It's really a tragedy, Joy, because so many people in and out of Congress were conned into thinking that this would be a report of integrity written by General Petraeus, and we might finally get some candor about what's going on out there. Now it's looking like it's just going to be more White House spin. Maybe it'll be written by Karl Rove or something like that.
Well, maybe he has some time now. We'll talk about that in a little while. But Kevin Hermaning, what about this Petraeus report?
Well, it seems to me that for a change, we are starting to see some military leadership be exercised in this war effort rather than the politicians run it or attempt to run it. I don't share the viewpoint, as you would expect, that Tony has on this. My view is that the surge is playing a role. The violence directed against Americans certainly has been on the decline over the last 7 to 10 weeks. And quite frankly, the ethnic battling has moved beyond the city limits of Mosul and Baghdad and up into the far northern hinterlands up in the Kurdish territory, which is tragic for them. But I wouldn't say that that victory is around the corner by any stretch of the imagination, but clearly our efforts have had them on the run, the insurgents, for the last several months.
We are averaging 3 Americans killed per day this month. I don't know how the violence against American soldiers has decreased. The numbers have persisted.
July and August thus far in the last 7 weeks has fortunately seen some of the fewest number of fatalities, and that's good news.
Yeah, there's a report that Petraeus is putting together recommendations for cutting the force level there. He said this week, there's no question the troop surge in Iraq has to end and that the U.S. footprint there needs to be smaller by next summer. But he is still warning against a quick or significant withdrawal. Tony Palmieri?
It looks like he's arriving at some of the recommendations of the Iraq Study Group, which the President and Vice President Cheney have rejected. I mean, he's obviously not going as far as what I would like, or what the Dane County Board and many, many others in this country, the majority, in fact, would like. But it looks like that Petraeus is moving away from the, you know, extreme hawkish position of Bush and Cheney. But it looks like they're not even going to let him write the report.
Well, Tony, I don't understand.
So we're going to end up with more spin.
Tony, I don't understand how, if the Bush and Cheney White House are writing the report and they're going to adopt things that they disagree with in the report, where's the claim stand? How does the claim stand with any veracity? It seems to me that the general on the ground and his gang there are the ones who know best about what the situation is, and they're giving the kind of reports and candid assessment that is necessary. I would also take issue with the idea that the vast majority of Americans want to see us pull out of Iraq. As I have read all of the poll results, poll numbers rather, and have assessed the situation for the last 5 years, it seems to me that what the American people would like is military victory in Iraq and some kind of a semblance that we can deliver to the Iraqi people and some sense of Middle East stability in effort to bring about a democratic effort and government in that country, something that they haven't seen ever.
Even in cities in Wisconsin that supported Bush-Cheney in 2004, referendum questions passed that said an immediate pullout from Iraq. I believe it's representative of the rest of the country. The Democrats came to power in November of 06 under the understanding that they would do something to get us out of Iraq. I think the overwhelming majority of people want to see this war end.
Let me hold you both here for now. We need to take a short pause. We'll continue talking about the news of the week with Tony Palmieri and Kevin Hermaning. And with you, if you'd like to bring up a topic from the news this week, call us 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Number of things we'll talk about after the break, like Karl Rove announcing his resignation. How about the move by the administration to declare Iran's Revolutionary Guard a terrorist organization? Those issues and more coming up on The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Ideas Network. You're listening to The Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you with us. Hope you stay tuned. It's your views on the news this afternoon after 4 o'clock. Ben Marins and his guest, Mordecai Lee, professor of governmental affairs at UW-Milwaukee, will talk with you about the story in the news this week that has your attention. And we are reviewing all of the significant, mainly political, news stories of the week this hour with Kevin Hermaning, former chair of the Marathon County Republican Party, a former hostage in Iran, currently financial planner in Wausau, and Tony Palmieri, associate professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh, a former Green Party candidate for the state legislature, a member of the Oshkosh Common Council, and a media columnist for the Fox Valley's alternative newspaper, The Valley Scene. 1-800-642-1234, our number if you would like to call in with your take on a story in the news this week or an issue that you would like our guests to talk about. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890.
Karl Rove is moving on down the road. I've been talking to Karl for a while about his desire to spend more time with Darby and Andrew. This is a family that's made enormous sacrifices, not only for our beloved state of Texas, but for a country we both love.
So, Karl Rove, moving on down the road, announcing he is leaving the White House and his position as advisor to the president, a deputy chief of staff, I think. Why is he moving on down the road, Kevin Hermaning?
Well, I think that his work in Washington is done. His work in Texas is done, at least as it relates to George W. Bush. George W. Bush is coming into the last 17 months of his presidency, and he's been finessing President Bush's political career for 14 years. So it's just time for him to move on. And my only concern in this area is that if this is something that's been talked about for a while and President Bush has hung on to him, just like he hung on to Rumsfeld until 2 weeks, and we talked about this nearly a year ago, 2 weeks after the election or a couple of weeks after last fall's election, and then found out a couple of days later that it had been in the works for about 3 weeks. Some of us, if that's the case, wish that he would have accepted the resignation 3 weeks earlier. President Bush has taken a lot of hits because of Karl Rove, and nonetheless, President Bush, in many respects, owes his presidency to the excellence and the direction and the advice and good private counsel of Karl Rove. I just simply hope at the end of the day that he doesn't come out and become another political hack in the sense that he writes a tell-all book like so many have in both political parties over the years.
Tony Palmieri?
Well, definitely even Karl Rove's opponents need to agree he was one of the shrewdest political calculators in the history of the country. I mean, to be able to get George W. Bush into the White House, not just once, but twice, is no small accomplishment, an extremely shrewd individual. But I think he's leaving because the heat is still on things like the U.S. Attorneys controversy, where it's looking like U.S. attorneys were let go for sheer political reasons, and Karl Rove's role in that has still not fully been revealed, and I think the Bush administration does not need that distraction to continue. Perhaps they feel that by getting or letting Karl Rove go, the heat on Attorney General Gonzales will be reduced, but I suspect that won't be the case either. I think, and one last thing I'm going to say about Karl Rove, if I were a Republican, I would be upset with Karl Rove in the sense that he has essentially banished moderates from the party. I mean, the Rove political strategy has been to appeal to the right-wing fundamentalist base, get it energized, and essentially that wing of the party becomes the empowered wing, and that has had really devastating consequences for moderates. I mean, look at the fact that people like John McCain, Rudy Giuliani, you know, people who dare to take moderate positions on social issues probably don't have a chance to get nominated for the presidency. I think that's bad for the Republican Party and bad for the country, actually.
Absolute incorrect assessment of the impact that Karl Rove has had on the so-called right-wing elements of the Republican Party versus the moderates. The fact of the matter is, and we talked about this, Tony, you mentioned this earlier, that it's your belief that last November's elections were a referendum on the war in Iraq.
That's right.
When in fact, most of the analyses that were done post election also talk about how other huge issues, particularly for Republicans, particularly for conservative Republicans, right-wing conservative Republicans, the religious right, if you will, indicated just how upset conservative Republicans were with George Bush's and the Republican Congress's addiction to spending, their caving in on illegal immigration issues, the inability to get anything done on health care reform, and putting it back into the private sector's hands where it belongs. It makes no sense to me that you would suggest it's the right wing of the Republican Party.
Where are the Republican moderates? Where are the Republican moderates 6 years after Rove and Bush?
The Republican moderates are the ones who are pushing Mitt Romney and Rudy Giuliani's campaigns forward far and away ahead of war advocates
Mitt
like
Romney,
John McCain.
Mitt Romney, as I'm sure you are aware, Kevin, has flip-flopped on social issues.
I am well aware of all of the positions of all of the candidates.
He realizes that after Rove, it is virtually impossible for a moderate Republican to get the nomination of that party.
It's nearly impossible for a moderate Democrat to get the nomination of the Democrat Party as well. But it doesn't mean that their core beliefs are suddenly the ones that they are sharing and espousing now.
Yeah.
All candidates come back to the center after the primary process.
Let's talk a little bit about one of Rove's parting shots, so to speak. He did talk about the 08 presidential election and said the Democrats were going to nominate a tenacious candidate, a fatally flawed candidate, in referring to Hillary Clinton. Your thoughts on that, Kevin Hermaning?
Well, I just simply think that Hillary is unelectable. Her negatives are way too high. All the money, all the Hollywood backing, all the big money donors, you cannot buy an election at the presidential level. You may be able to do it for the U.S. Senate. You may be able to do it for some congressional seats, even for the governorship. But do it at the federal level where all eyes of the nation are focused on it.
Yeah. Before we get to Tony Palmieri to respond, let me bring in Eric in Green Bay. Hi, Eric. You're on the air.
Good morning. My comment on the Karl Rove thing, pushing the Republican Party way to the right, I think the same thing is happening on the Democratic Party by the MoveOn.org's and everybody moving way to the left because, like, the moderate Democrats like Joe Lieberman are basically outcasts of the party. It's happening on both sides.
Tony Palmieri?
Well, I think what you find is that the so-called left in America is extremely unhappy with Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and the front runners in the Democratic primaries. And I just to respond to Kevin's point, I think Hillary is very electable, especially when we look at the fact that the Republican candidates still, to this very day, cannot bring themselves to come out against the war. I mean, we could see a situation where even though Hillary Clinton herself has been, you know, very very shady, let's say, on the war, she could get in, I think, on that issue alone. If the Republican Party does not finally accept reality, the American public does not want this war, I don't see how they win the White House in 2008.
Well, Mitt Romney did win the straw poll, the Iowa Republican straw poll on Saturday. Tommy Thompson did not do as well as he wanted to do.
At number six, Tommy Thompson, 1,039 votes, 7.3%.
Thompson had already left the Coliseum, but the results stunned his staff. Campaign manager Steve Grubb stepped away to break the news to the candidate. Thompson and his staff met privately to plan their next move, but it was already clear to most what that move would be.
And that move was that he did drop out of the presidential race. Your reaction to that, Kevin Hermaning?
Well, I think Tommy Thompson himself said it best when he stated that his best opportunity to have run for national office would have been in 2000 or even in 1996. Perhaps he wouldn't have made it all the way through the nomination process, but even then he would have been a much better prospective vice presidential candidate. I don't know Tommy Thompson's true intentions or this race. They always, of course, say that they're running for the top spot, but we all know that many of them intentionally get into the presidential race hoping and knowing that they're not going to win, but hoping that they might get tabbed for the VP spot. Good for him that he put his his time in and he decided to make an effort of it. Too bad he didn't get any further, but I don't think very many people are surprised by that. He was not well-funded enough.
Tony Palmieri?
Well, it was interesting. In the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Tommy was concerned or bothered that people who had traditionally given him money in Wisconsin were not giving it to his presidential campaign. But, you know, it makes sense. He couldn't do anything for them in Iowa. I mean, Tommy in reality, was victimized by the very thing he benefited from in Wisconsin, big money politics. And he did nothing to reform that system in Wisconsin while he was here. And now he too is a victim of it in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. One more call on the Rove and politics. Amy and Appleton.
Thank you. My observation of Karl Rove's leadership in the last 6.5 years with our presidential campaigns is that he is very significantly responsible for bringing the political discourse to an all-time low. And I think that the way that he left with his comment towards Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign is just a very clear snapshot of how bottom of the barrel he's brought so much of the political discourse. And he's done it quite single-handedly, actually. And I'll take my comment off the air.
How about Tony Palmieri? You want to react to that?
I think Amy's correct. I mean, most people would agree we do have a very debased political discourse in this country. And the Karl Roves of the world are a significant part of that, playing to biases and stereotypes and swift voting in campaigns and so on and so forth. So I think Amy is right on target. Mm-hmm. I mean, people like Karl Rove, and he, of course, is not the only one doing this, but he becomes kind of like the archetype of it. They manufacture these extremely negative campaigns, and consequently our political discourse suffers.
Kevin Hermaning?
Well, they used to say the same thing about Newt Gingrich back in 1994 and 1996 and 1998.
And it was true then, too.
Of course. So it's just apparently routine. I don't agree with that, by the way, but apparently you believe that every day, as long as a Republican says something about a Democrat or a liberal, that it's an all-time low. The fact of the matter is that politics has been a mean, dirty game, a win-take-no-prisoners occupation, career, if you will, since the founding of our country, and that's not going to change in the future. There's a lot more light being put on it, of course, by the news media, by the 24/7 media effort, and a lot more people blogging and all of those things, but I don't think that it's any worse or any better than it ever has been.
Now, let's switch topics here to something that has a lot of people worried, and that is people wondering if the administration is contemplating some sort of military action against Iran by taking the step to declare Iran's Revolutionary Guard a terrorist organization. Kevin Hermaning, I know this is something that you've been following. What do you think?
Well, the Revolutionary Guards have actually been terrorists since 1979. But the fact of the matter is that this is something that should have been done since we first created this category in our government, known as specially designated global terrorist. Whether it's a group, a government agency, or a government itself, it should have been used in this area a long time ago.
What do you think, Tony Palmieri?
Well, my guess would be that in 6 months we will hear that Iran has the second largest military in the world, and then probably 3 weeks after that we'll hear that they are 45 minutes away from launching a nuclear strike. I think this is all part of the plan to invade. And, you know, sadly, not to keep picking on the Democrats, but Dennis Kucinich, I believe, has been the only presidential candidate to call this what it is, you know, a blatant attempt to manipulate the public view of this part of the world to justify a possible invasion. And it's very unfortunate. It's really a test for the Democrats in Congress, and it's a test for we the people if we will allow this administration to continue down this road.
Yeah. Well, first, you know what, Tony? I just want to take issue with something that you said. Quote your words, this part of the world is not any better or worse than the United States and our people. The fact of the matter is that the average person in Iran, for that matter, the average person in most of the Middle East countries that have not had a democratic form of government, except for Israel, ever, they also aspire to a free democratic society with open and free financial markets and economic markets. And you and I may disagree as to whether or not our government, our country, our people have a responsibility to assist people in trying to pursue their God-given abilities and rights. But the fact is that the average person in Iran doesn't walk around with bombs strapped to their chests expecting to blow up the next American that walks down their street. The average Iranian person loves the United States. They love free and open and democratic governments and societies. And I do not believe that we're going to see a military invasion of Iran. We may see some type of military action either by Israel or the United States or some of our allies against some of their nuclear sites, but I do not believe that we are in a position, nor should we be in a position, where we have to pursue military action with troops on the ground in Iran.
The Bush administration says Jose Padilla has received a just verdict after he and his two co-defendants were convicted yesterday of federal terrorism support charges. Any thoughts on this, Tony Palmieri?
In some respects, it really was a defeat for the Bush administration, because Padilla was taken out of the military tribunal and he was tried in a criminal court, and it made the argument of the opponents of the Bush administration that we do not need these military tribunals to fight this war on terror. So while it is true that Padilla was convicted and the Bush administration wanted him convicted, they wanted him tried or put in a military court, and that never happened. So in that respect, the Bush administration's key strategy for fighting their war against terrorists has been shown to not be necessary, and that we can do this through the criminal court, as was shown in the case of Padilla.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Hermany?
Well, Jose Padilla was declared originally an unlawful enemy combatant, and that, of course, is what was removed from the ultimately from his case and put him in with the other two defendants in Miami. But really, I think the conviction yesterday, the guilty verdict, I should say, bolsters the administration that has enjoyed relatively few high-profile successes in busting up terror cells. Obviously, the Moussaoui case, he pled guilty to conspiracy charges and now faces life imprisonment. But this is a huge win for the government and for the Department of Justice. A lot of people from the White House on down were watching this one very closely.
Let's take a short pause and then continue talking with Kevin Hermany and Tony Palmieri about the news of the week. After the break, we'll talk about some state government news, including the lack of progress on the state budget, the negotiating committee that's trying to hammer out a new state budget, not making much progress. Plus, maybe if we have time, we'll see what our guests have to say, see if they have a favorite Elvis song or something, since we observe the anniversary this week, the 30-year anniversary of Elvis's death. 1-800-642-1234 is the number that you can call if you have an item from the news this week that you would like to discuss, something you'd like to hear our guests talk about. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up, Kathleen Dunn is with you. She'll be talking all things Irish because the largest Irish music festival in the world is now underway in Milwaukee. Kathleen and her guests will celebrate the literary and musical traditions of the Emerald Isle coming up after 9 o'clock. We are reviewing the news of the week with Kevin Hermany, former chair of the Marathon County Republican Party, currently a financial planner in Wausau, and Tony Palmieri, an associate professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh, a former Green Party candidate, member of the Oshkosh Common Council. And we have an open line for you if you want to bring up an item from the news this week, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Let's talk a little bit about the state budget. As you probably know, the state assembly, the Republican-controlled state assembly, passed a very different version of the state budget than the democratically-controlled state senate. Now there is a conference committee trying to negotiate a compromise between the two versions of the budget. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio's state government reporter, has been covering these negotiations, and he says not much progress is being made.
Here's the way a typical meeting of the Budget Conference Committee has gone. Four Democrats and four Republicans sit down across from each other at a table. One party floats an offer on a given subject like higher ed funding or property tax relief. It's mostly stuff that they want, so the other side makes little or no attempt to come up with a counter. Instead, they trade barbs that have by now become familiar. At this latest meeting, lawmakers talked for a little more than 2 hours and got nowhere. Republican Speaker Mike Hipsch predicted how the next meeting would go unless something changes.
We're going to come up here and you're going to tell us how bad our budget is, and we'll tell you how bad your budget is, and we don't really resolve much.
Wisconsin is one of only three states whose fiscal year started July 1st that still don't have budgets, and there are no signs that things will get moving here anytime soon. Senate Democratic Majority Leader Judy Robson says this is a very important part of the process, especially now that more people can watch it over the Wisconsin Eye cable network.
Our different visions need to be explained so that the folks out there in Wisconsin who wonder why things happen the way they do can be brought in and understand what we're doing.
Wisconsin has a history of drawn-out budget battles when the legislature is under split control. Twice in the late 90s, a budget wasn't signed until October. Part of the reason is the lack of urgency at this stage in the game. Unlike many other states, Wisconsin's old budget automatically renews itself if there's not another one in its place. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Well, what do you think, Tony Palmieri, first? Should there be more urgency with the state budget? Should there be some sort of consequences if we don't have a budget by July 1st?
Well, as a local government official here in Oshkosh, I'd say there sure ought to be urgency. I mean, we need to know what level of support we're getting from Madison in order to form our own budget. we had a budget workshop last Tuesday night, and it was very frustrating because absent any action in Madison, we just can't proceed. And that's true of every other local government unit in the state, city and county. So it sure ought to be urgent, and I think it's really absurd what they're doing down there. What I want to know is if we have 99 members of the Assembly and 33 members of the Senate, and it's these eight characters in conference that won't do anything, what are the other members of the legislature doing? I mean, we're paying them a full-time salary with great benefits. None of them are able to stand up and get these eight people to move. I mean, something just seems bizarre about this to me.
Let me ask you before I get Kevin Hermaning to weigh in on the lack of progress. As a local official on the Oshkosh Common Council, what version of the state budget do you most favor? Which one treats cities better than the other?
Well, the Republican budget is not good for local government because it further cuts our shared revenue. I mean, this is money that taxpayers send to Madison, and then we get it returned to help us for fire, police, roads, and every other municipal service. And the shared revenue payments that local governments have been receiving have been either staying at the same level or going down for the last 10 to 15 years. The Republican budget would make that even worse. So I don't see how any local government official could support the Republican version of the budget. I mean, I have problems with the Democrat version of the budget also, but it is certainly not as bad for local government as the Republican budget is.
Kevin Hermaning?
Well, I think Tony characterizing only the Republican proposed budget as bad for local governments is kind of like Elvis Presley's number one hit from 1969, Suspicious Minds. The fact of the matter is that shared revenue can only come back if sufficient number of dollars are collected by Madison to fund both state government and the money that is returned back to cities, counties, villages, schools, and whichever other local municipality entity that I missed. The fact is that we have a budget crisis because there's no money. We don't have no money because taxes are too low. We have no money in Madison because spending is too high. And what they're trying to hammer out in Madison is a balance between raising spending a little bit, okay, to accommodate union contracts and normal costs of living for bridges and roads and highways and other infrastructure needs, and the reality that taxes can't be too high. They already are, but they can't be raised too much higher. Revenues cannot be collected to a much greater degree than they presently are because we're taking it out of small businesses, big businesses, and homeowners and taxpayers who are trying to raise a family on a fixed budget themselves. The only part of our country that doesn't live on a fixed income sometimes is government itself.
Yeah. Tony Palmieri?
Your question was, should there be urgency here? And of course there should be urgency here. The longer this goes on, the longer local governments cannot form their budgets, the longer students don't know how much tuition they will be paying, the longer we have no resolution to the health care crisis. The one thing I will say for the Democrats is that the Senate Democrats have put forward a fairly courageous health care proposal, a universal health care plan. And that's something also that local governments ought to be looking at very, very closely, because currently a major part of our budget is paying for health care of public employees. And it looks to me like that Senate Democrat plan would really remove the burden, or at least lessen the burden, on local governments. But the Republicans won't even allow for any movement on this. And so the standstill is not helping anybody. And I think their only argument against the Senate health care plan is that one of the lead authors of it spent money in her Senate campaign while she was having health insurance issues herself. I mean, it's just an ad hominem attack. We need better public debate than that on an issue as important as this one.
Yeah. The Wisconsin Police Association is upset with the Republican version of the budget, Kevin Hermaning, and actually I think started an ad campaign targeting a Republican from South Central Wisconsin, Eugene Hahn, saying that you know, he doesn't care about safety and we, people shouldn't reelect him. What do you make of that?
Well, I don't understand the ridicule and the arguments that are being proposed. You made the point at the start of this particular section of the conversation when you said that spending levels, the budget from last year, continues into the new year unless they change it. It seems to me that the governments at every level, including the police administrations, the cities, villages, counties, towns, school districts, ought to operate under the context that they're not going to get a raise next year. And they ought to figure out their budgets based on that context. And then if they get a raise, then they can add that to their general revenues and either look for additional ways to spend it or return it back to the taxpayers through lower taxes in the next taxing period. So nobody is losing anything here. They're just not getting the big bump that they expected or were hoping to get.
Oh, I could say that that public broadcasting is losing in the assembly budget, and that all funding for public broadcasting is eliminated. It's not just a reduction.
You're talking about in the proposals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but that cannot become law unless it is signed by the governor. The fact of the matter is that the spending levels of the past year continue into the new year until a new budget is passed.
Yeah, now the
You will not be shut off the air, is my point, unless they pass a law to create that.
Do you support that proposal, Kevin, to end?
No, I don't support that proposal. But, you know, Tony, you said that students aren't going to know what tuition amounts they're going to pay. That's absolutely incorrect. A student at UW-Madison taking 18 credits is going to pay $3,594.20. It's already a known dollar amount. It's not an unknown.
Let me take a call on this. Rick in East Troy is with us. Hi, Rick. You're on the air.
Hi there. I guess this is going to be my last call because I'm moving to Colorado tomorrow.
Well, but, I hope it's not something we said.
Taxes got to him, apparently.
No. Not Kevin and I went to school back in Oak Creek and graduated in 77.
Hmm.
The reason I'm calling is I guess I'm just a little tired of the partisanship and what seems to be happening, especially at the state level, which really infuriates me, is this budget is a perfect example. We have two extreme positions, and people sit down and they don't negotiate. There's one extreme, there's the other extreme, and it's almost like two kids on a playground. Well, if you don't want to play our game, then we control the assembly, and this is what we're going to do. Nobody sits down and talks. When I talked to Fred Risser several years ago, he reminded me that back in the 60s and the 70s, when people would argue on the floor of the Senate chamber or the House chamber, they would argue vehemently for their positions, but then they'd go and have dinner afterward and say, boy, that was a good point you brought up. Nobody wants to work for the best interest of the people. These are professional politicians, yep. No longer public servants.
Yeah. Well, Rick, thanks for calling, and you can still listen on the internet, and you can still call in from Colorado.
I intend to.
Good, and it sounded like you were a classmate of Kevin Hermaning's?
Yes, I was.
Well, I'm glad that we could reunite you over the air. You must then be had a class reunion this summer, Kevin Hermaning, because I'm having mine tomorrow, and I graduated in 77. So,
you know what? We have not had ours.
Oh, okay. Anyway, what do you think of your classmates' assessment of state politics?
Well, actually, apparently there is not a very good understanding of the way most of the dialogue still does take place in Madison. I know my state senator, who chairs at the Senate level the Joint Finance Committee. I know my state representative very well, Jerry Petruski, from the Republican side. And these folks, not the two of them necessarily, but people of varying part of the two parties do occasionally get together in a social setting. They do get along. Not all of them, typically not amongst the leadership, but the fact is that it is a career. It is no longer a calling. And that has changed from the founder's intent, in my opinion. It was originally something that people did out of an interest in public service alone. They did it for a temporary part of their life, and then they went back to their communities and lived under the laws that they themselves helped to write. And I think if we had that kind of an interest and an effort in the future, or we returned to that model, they may not be quite as willing to spend the taxpayers' dollars as foolishly as they do, or for that matter, to impose the kind of constraints on life that a lot of us don't particularly think government has a role in playing.
Tony, what do you think?
I actually agree with Rick and Kevin largely. When Fred Risler was talking to Rick about the 60s and 70s, I wonder if he mentioned that we had a part-time legislature back then.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what you find is that states in which the budget process goes on endlessly are usually states in which you have full-time career politicians that are actually even raising money during the budget process from parties that have an interest in the budget, which is kind of outrageous if you think about it. So, you know, a part-time citizen legislature wants to get in, do what they have to do to get their budget resolved and go home. We don't see that in Wisconsin. So we need some pretty dramatic political reform down there. And unfortunately, I don't see the legislature or the governor leading in that direction.
Yeah, let me get a call in from Marty in Douglas County. Hi, Marty.
Well, boy, is this ever off topic.
Well, it's all right. We're almost out of time, so I wanted to get some other topics in. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm wondering if anybody's heard about the bomb material that was found near the Arrowhead Weston power line construction in Douglas County last night.
Yeah, I see here that the Douglas County Sheriff's Department says the devices were homemade, stuff you can basically make up in your kitchen, but there's not a lot of details on this. Kevin Hermaning, have you heard anything about that?
No, quite honestly, yeah. I have not.
Yeah, what do you think about this, Marty? You think that people don't want the Arrowhead Weston line there? Is that what's going on?
I don't think that. I mean, it's been quite obvious for the last 7-8 years that's what's been going on, and I'm just stunned that this didn't happen sooner. But I guess stay tuned.
Yeah.
But don't come looking for me. I didn't have anything to do
yeah.
with it.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Marty. You know, speaking of, I didn't get your take on a disaster that's in the news this morning. The mine in Utah, the rescue attempt has been called off for now because three rescue workers were killed in a cave-in late last night. Others were injured. Some are now saying we really need to look at our mining rules and safety regulations. What do you say, Kevin Hermaning?
Well, after the Sago incident, there was a lot of media attention paid to reform. The United Mine Workers, of course, were involved in some of those reforms, but it doesn't seem that this particular mine has had the violations that have to do with true safety. They've had a number of violations that had to do with whether or not the porta-potties were close enough to the entrance and things of that sort. Mm-hmm. But this mine actually is in a very lucrative part of the country for the kind of mining that was done. By the same token, it has historically been dangerous to mine in this part of the country as well.
We're almost out of time. Less than 30 seconds, Tony.
The federal government does need to take a much closer look at mining safety and demand some accountability from the industry.
Yeah. Well, that gave us time to find out what your favorite Elvis song is. We have time. You said Suspicious Minds earlier, Kevin Hermaning. Is that yours?
No, I just thought appropriate for that particular discussion. I've got two. I think Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign will have to rely on It's Now or Never from 1960, the number one hit. And all the Republican candidates are hoping the 1962, I believe it was, number one hit, Good Luck Charm.
All right. Very good on short notice. What about you, Tony Palmieri?
I can't top that. I like all Elvis's songs. But I will say, at our great Grand Opera House in Oshkosh, which I hope everyone of your listeners visits, last year they did a special. They showed Elvis's Blue Hawaii, and I was pleasantly shocked to see the place was almost filled to watch this old Elvis movie. People still love the guy 30
years
later.
Do. Thank you so much to both of you for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joy.
Tony Palmieri and Kevin Hermaning, thanks to Leo Duran for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.